Hey, everyone. Happy Monday, first of all. And at Drive to HR, we are excited to be back live on air on time, 12 noon Central Time. So you are listening to Drive to HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And today we are going to have a wonderful, wonderful guest, Susan Steinbrecher. Hey, Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be with you.
Well, we are honored to have you here with us today. So, Susan, a lot of things are going on, exciting things are happening, new book has arrived. So we are really looking forward to learning more about that. But before we get to that, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and what you do so that our audience can learn more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Name Susan Steinbrecher, and I have had my company, Steinbrecher & Associates, for about 22 years. Prior to starting my company, I specialized in the hospitality industry, so I had an opportunity to be in hotel operations first and foremost before I transitioned into the organizational development and training field, if you would. And then in terms of what my organization does, we specialize in a couple of key areas. One is a custom designing learning solutions for major companies, primarily around leadership development, also things like customer service and sales. And we also provide executive coaching services, and we have a very, very specific and unique results-oriented and results-based, ROI-based coaching methodology that we use. We also often lead or facilitate strategic off-site retreats and things like that, and just do general consulting as well.
Great, wonderful. So, Susan, tell us more about your book. Before we get to, what's keeping you up at night and a regular question, we would like to give a shout-out to, your book and where can people find it. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So my latest book, I've had a few books out, but my latest one is really the second edition of the book called Heart-Centered Leadership, Lead Well, mm-hmm. Live Well. And this is a book that my co-author, Dr. Joel Bennett, and I wrote, and this is actually the second edition. The first edition was done about a decade ago, and especially with the title Heart-Centered Leadership, as you imagine, not everyone can catch up with that, the word heart and the word leadership in the same sentence. When we first put this book out a decade ago, people said we were absolutely cutting edge and way before our time. And now what we realize is that there are certainly other books out there that have the word heart and leadership in it. People have caught up much more with this theme. But it is certainly something that we've learned a lot in the last decade. We've had an opportunity to really see it put into action, and we wanted to update and provide the latest research and information in this second edition. So the second edition came out this year. And heart-centered leadership really talks about what is the difference between being a manager, a leader, and then a heart-centered leader. And
great.
We'd like to define those things, because when I think about a manager, I think about someone who's typically more tactically oriented, someone who is, management to me is sort of the process of working through others to achieve those organizational objectives in a often today constant and changing environment. And that, of course, entails making sure that there's effective and efficient, use of resources, and often limited resources at that. And when I think about the difference between management and leadership, is I think about leadership as being a little bit more strategic in nature, and for someone to be a very good leader, it's, to me, a different toolkit they're operating off of. They need to be much better at things like inspiration, motivation, persuasion, negotiation. And so I think about that leader as that ability to make things happen by encouraging, inspiring others. And when I think about what we define heart-centered leadership to be, it's leadership up and then kicked up a whole nother notch, which is having the wisdom, really the courage and compassion to lead others with authenticity, transparency, humility, and service. And that's what really sets heart-centered leadership apart.
Wonderful. So, guys, go ahead and check it out. Her new book and the website name is heartcenteredleadership.com, where you can purchase the book. And so, Susan, what's keeping you up at night these days when you are working with your clients or probably when you are speaking across the globe? What is that one thing that is generally keeping you up at night?
Well, I think, first of all, I'm not one to say, in other words, I sleep pretty well. but I know the gist of your question, and that is, you know, what's sort of on my mind or what is bothersome or so of what I see out there. And I guess the way I would answer that is that there are so many managers/leaders struggling with getting their employees to be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've seen all the research out there that supports that there's a tremendous percentage of employees that are really disengaged. And to me, it's simple but not easy. And the simple but not easy part is that there are some definite things that one can do to be sure that they have a highly motivated workforce. That is what I call tapped in, turned on, tuned in, and emotionally connected to that business, to that leader into the business, and motivated to perform at such a level that they don't even want to let that leader down. And I've had so many managers say, how do you get that? I mean, how do I get that to happen? Because that's what I obviously want to have happen. And that's where heart-centered leadership really comes in. And we map out 7 principles that helps you achieve that outcome. And again, it's simple yet not always easy to execute, but the concepts are something to say, if I really embrace these 7 principles and I do these 7 principles, then that's what actually turns out as an end result.
Wonderful. So would you like to give a shout out to those 7 principles so that people can learn more about what's in your book?
Sure, happy to. So the first principle is called Know Thyself. And that really mm-hmm. translates to having the courage, because it can be a courageous journey, to look in the mirror and truly own and take personal responsibility and accountability for how you show up as a leader. So we're human and we have our good days and our bad days, but the important thing to keep in mind when you're a leader is that you're always, always on stage. So what you say and do is being observed, like it or not, often being judged by others, which is not the ideal situation, but it really is the situation. So we always say to leaders, you need to be really mindful of the fact that you're showing up every day and in every way, and to be sure that you're aware that that's something, that image that's being projected, that personal brand that's being projected is one that you want to have. So that's the first one. So it's that willingness to look in the mirror and really own some behaviors, if you will. The second one is called Don't Judge or Assume, Instead Come to Understand. And this is a really challenging one because a lot of leaders, and all of us as a society, frankly, are judgmental by nature, as I just mentioned. So this is really having that leader ask questions about that employee's performance. And asking questions like, wow, I wonder what's going on, you know, with Mary. Mary doesn't seem to be as engaged as she normally is, and I'm noticing that she's been late 3 times this week. And so it's being inquisitive and coming to understand the reasons for the behavior, because there's always a why and a reason underneath that behavior if you're willing to ask the question and explore it, versus getting upset or frustrated and saying, well, Mary's late 3 times and she knows better than that. I'm going to sit down and tell her she's late. Well, Mary probably knows she's late. So
yeah.
I don't know what that's going to actually achieve. But it's being, again, it's shifting the mind from the judgment and the assumption of what they see and making their own conclusion to really exploring what is actually happening so that you can talk to that employee, find out what's going on, and really custom craft with that employee solution so that that performance turns around, because that's ultimately the goal. So a third principle is what we call they need what you need. And this is really about the mind shift again. And this is for the leader to say, gosh, that, you know, no matter what title I have versus my employee or what car I drive or what house I live on or what side of the tracks I live on or whatever that is, we're really basically the same. You know, at the end of the day, a human being to human being, the needs that I have as a leader is very similar to the needs that that employee has. you know, we all go through life and have our challenges, and we have, you know, the good days and bad days and everything else. And so it's just recognizing that really at the end of the day, we're not that different. And I also have a principle called letting go. And this one's also not necessarily very easy, but it's about really stepping back and empowering the employee or the associate to perform, coach them, mentor them, yes, hold them accountable, yes, but it's not controlling it. And that's where the empowerment comes in versus the disempowerment. So it's really trusting that this person has capability. And if you're looking, if you see that they don't for some reason, that's where the coaching and mentoring code comes into play. Another principle is called know your impact. And again, this goes back to being conscious and mindful of everything that you say and do creates an impact. And so the question for the leader is, what kind of impact are you wanting to make? Mm-hmm. And then you start going from there. And then we have a principle called associates have a choice. And this is something that's real important for leaders to understand, that just because you have a title and you have what we call position power by the nature of your title doesn't mean that employees have to follow you. You know, so there's a certain amount that the position power will help. I mean, in the sense of you do have a title, you have a certain amount of power to make decisions and things like that. But employees will sometimes comply because you're the boss, but their heart's not in it. And if their heart's not in it and their motivation's not there, then they might comply, but are they committing? And those are really different things when you think about complying versus committing. So this is where, in this principle, associates have a choice. It's for the leader to recognize that it's not just the position power. It's what we call the personal power. This is who this person is, and how you're treated creates that personal power. And this is where the real motivation comes to be, because, you know, why would you want to work for this person? Why would you want to give your all or not? And that's biggest lesson for me, is to help us teach leaders about this difference between having personal power and position power. And then the last principle is called care for the heart. And so when Dr. Bennett and I set out to write this book, you know, we really wanted to look at that leader holistically, you know, mind, body, and spirit, and the health of that leader, because we know statistically, and it's pointed out in the book, that how that leader shows up, their physical health, their mental health, their psychological health, all of that has an impact on the people working around them. You know, I've often, when I do workshops and presentations on heart-centered leadership, I've asked people about, you know, have they ever had what they call the toxic boss? And they all go, oh, yeah, I know what that is. I've had one of those. So they just know, even by the term, that this is somebody that's created all kinds of sort of disruption for the employees and the workforce. And, I mean, not only are they demotivated to not work for this person, or, you know, they feel like if they comply, it's purely out of the power that they have to, or out of fear of not having a job. But on top of it, their health is impacted often. So this particular principle, we really jump into and delve into that whole holistic aspect of that leader. And we talk about the impact the leader has on not only their own health based on their leadership style, but the health of the people all around them. You know, we talk about how to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, spiritually, et cetera. And how that has a direct correlation to productivity, and how that has a direct correlation to employee engagement. So those are the seven principles.
Wonderful. Well, let's do a quick reset so that people can learn more about what we are talking at this point. Everyone, we are talking to our guest, Susan Steinbrecher, and we are hearing more about her new book, which is a second edition, Heart-Centered Leadership, Lead Well and Leave Well. Check it out. She is talking more about leading or managing and what's it like to be a manager or a leader. So, Susan, as you were saying, you know, the position power and personal power, and you talked a little bit about the engagement factor as well. When we talk about engagement, it is an emotional attachment that employee that he himself have to feel, right? So what's the role of a leader, very particularly, for creating an emotionally engaged or making that employee an emotionally invested in the job or in the organization?
Yeah, you know, there's a few things that I think if a leader really embraced, they would, the outcome of that is they would achieve that engaged workforce. One of the things that comes to mind is esteeming their employees. So this is where you're looking for every opportunity to say to this person, you know, you've done a really excellent job. Let's say you did an excellent job on this report. Being very specific with that feedback. It's not just good job. It's this was an excellent report because I could see that you took the time, you invested in, you have all the research that is to back up your message. You put in tabs. The cover is brilliantly designed. You know, so it's giving very specific feedback as to why, i.e., you think that report was extremely well done. So it's giving positive feedback. It's also giving what I call guidance feedback, which is feedback that's corrective in nature. And this is where if the person did not do something well, it's also saying things like, you know, here's what I saw you do, here's what I'd recommend you do differently and why, and here would be the impact of that. So it's specific feedback even when it's guidance feedback. So it's esteeming, it's at least enhancing where appropriate, or at least not demotivating or creating a downward spiral for that person. And I think another one is listening. I mean, being fully present, show that you're listening to this individual, which means not multitasking. It's writing notes. It's nodding of the head. It's paraphrasing or summarizing back. It's clarifying. All of those signals show this employee that you're truly in the moment and present with the person and genuinely listening to what they have to say. And then that's where it's responding appropriately with empathy, not necessarily sympathy, but empathy. And this is what tricks a lot of managers up. They sometimes feel like, well, I just don't agree what that person had a flat tire and they were late to work that day. I totally disagree. They should have had done something preventatively to cause that to not happen or whatever their situation may be. And this is where I say it trips them up because a lot of managers, I think that they have to agree to empathize, and you don't. Empathy truly is expressing where that person is, fact and feeling. So this is a situation, I can imagine how difficult that was in expressing that. And then I think a third one is what I think of as just involving that employee, asking their opinion. What do you think we should do about this? Would you please come to this meeting? We'd love to hear from you. These are all things that meet those, what I call them, the golden rules. And those three things meet the employee's personal needs, those ego needs, and it keeps them fully vested in the relationship with that boss because they know the person genuinely cares about them, which means they want to work their best for them.
Great. So we have these leaders and we have these managers in an organization. But what it is that probably, if we can pinpoint three things that separate a leader from a manager.
Yeah, when I think of the manager, I do think much more tactically oriented, and I think about planning, organizing, directing, controlling, you know, those kind of basic managerial, and believe me, every organization needs that person. This is not to say that that there's not a space for the manager. There absolutely is. When I think about the leader, I think about that separate toolkit. And this, I will tell you, I do so much executive coaching, and I've worked with so many leaders that, you know, they've risen really fast in their career. They finally get to a point, and they kind of like hit a wall. And the reason they're hitting that wall is because they don't know how to transition from the management skill to the new toolkit that's going to be required if you're the leadership. The leadership toolkit, and that is the leader is much more about having competency in persuading people, influencing people, motivating, negotiating. It's those kinds of things that it's going to be required because the higher up you go, the more that you don't have that position power. You're going to have to rely on the personal power. And what I mean by that, the position power part, is as it relates to your peers. Now, of course, you're going to have employees underneath you. But the higher up you go, the more you've got to get peers to agree to help you to get certain objectives met. And that's where the leadership toolkit really comes to play, and it comes to be, and it means building relationships with peers so that you can influence them and inspire them and help get their help to move towards a certain course of action. So I think of the leader as more strategic, more creative, more visionary, and also using those types of skills versus the management skill box.
So we have this debatable topic that normally people have is, great leaders make bad managers. Do you think so?
I don't know if I would agree with that 100%. I do think there's different skills for both, as I mentioned, and I do think there are times that you have to wear both hats. The trick is knowing when to deploy what set of tools, right? So if I need something, if there's an emergency situation, I'm not going to sit around asking questions around what does everybody think, okay? I'm going to deploy my management hat, and I'm going to start barking out orders, you know, because we're in an emergency situation, and there's not really time, nor is there appropriate use of negotiation as a skill for the leader. So it depends on the situation, and so I think where the sweet spot is knowing that you need to be able to operate off of both. Which one do you deploy for the given circumstance? It also has a lot to do with the experience of the employee. So if you have a brand new employee who knows nothing about the job or the company, you might not be asking that person a whole lot of questions about what do they think should be done here. They're looking for guidance and direction. So the directing part of the manager toolkit should be used in a case like that. Until you see this person's very competent and very capable, and they get more time vested in the job, then I think you're going to that person and using that sort of that questioning of what do you think is working, what's not working, what would you do differently? If you were in my shoes, how would you go about this procedure? Well, now they have time vested in the job and the organization to better answer questions like that.
Great. And I think I really, really appreciate that you said when managers are the key role for making an employee engaged, because they will have that one-on-one interaction on a daily basis, and they have much to do making a bigger impact. So when it comes to attracting a new employee or probably recruiting a new employee, yet managers will have to have assessment skills and finding the right fit for his team. So what do you recommend to your clients? What are some skills that managers should have while assessing a new employee and making a right match to his team?
Well, for me, in terms of recruiting the right person, a process I've used that's worked really, really beautifully for me is in the interview process, you know, first I'm identifying what is the actual job, I mean, getting clear on what is the actual job I'm trying to fill. What are the skills, ability, and knowledge, and what I call fit, motivational fit required for that job, and I'll speak about that in a moment. But so whatever those skills, ability, and knowledge is that I need in that job, then I'm asking questions that are going to specifically draw that out, right? So the best type of question I've used is what I think is a performance-based type of question, where you're asking specific questions about that person's skill level and ability and knowledge level. So it's things like, let's say you're hiring for a customer service representative, and this person needs to be skillful at handling a really difficult customer. Well, if I know that's a skill required of that position, I'm going to ask a question like, tell me about a specific time when you dealt with a really, really tough customer. What did you do? What happened? And what was the end result? And I want them to actually tell me the story. I want them to go back in their memory to tell me the story, because what we know is the best predictor of future performance is past behavior. So asking about a specific situation is going to get you much closer to what this person really did do, and then you can sniff out those skills, ability, and knowledge required, versus the mistake I see most managers make where they say, what would you do if? Well, if you do that, they're going to tell you this perfect scenario. I mean, they're going to say, oh, well, I conned the person. I mean, you know, they're going to lie in many cases. So you need to find out exactly what they have done, not what they would do. So that, in terms of form of interviewing, that's my favorite form, and it's been the most successful thing for me. I will also say, when I talk about fit, is I'm looking for motivational fit. I'm looking for the kinds of things that that individual is motivated most by. Is it working autonomously, working with the team? Is it, you know, what is it? And so I'm asking questions like, describe the most rewarding and exciting project you ever had to work on. What was that
right.
project and what made it so rewarding and exciting? And from that answer tells me a lot about what motivates that person and will that now fit this organization.
Well, I normally hear this quote from every manager when they are into a hiring process. Well, I'm looking for a person who can spend and sit at lunch time with me and my team members. Well, that is great. And some of them, really, after the work, they are going to have a drink as well. So can a manager and an employee be friends?
I think you can be friends, but I think you have to have appropriate boundaries here. And I think, you know, there's times, especially as a new manager, I've always had to say things like, listen, at the end of the day, if you have to do a forced choice about being liked or respected, you always want to be on the respected side. And it's nice if you can have both, but if you have to choose one, you need to be on the respected side. So what does that mean? That means that you need to make those kinds of decisions that have appropriate boundaries around them. So you can go have a drink with the employee and be sociable and personable. Always be very, very careful about that. That's a one-drink limit, by the way. this is where Know Thyself comes in, principle one of Heart Center Leadership.
Yeah, totally.
Because, listen, and then know your impact, another principle of Heart Center Leadership, right? So this is where you need to be very, very careful with this. But you can be sociable and you can be friendly and you can be, you know, part of the team in that way. But then you need to, after that drink, go ahead and go, right? I mean, this is where you have to have that appropriate boundary. So I think you can be, but with the appropriate boundaries, as I mentioned.
Indeed. Well, Susan, we have about 2 minutes left at this point, and my last question would be, how managers drive employees to quit? Because we know employees quit managers, not their
right.
organization or not their job.
Correct.
So
how do employees quit? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. What are some of the, you know, how can these managers drive employees to quit? What are some of the taboos that you wanted to communicate to our audience? Okay, let's not do this. Get rid of it.
Oh, I see. What are some of the things that actually create an employee to quit? Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when a boss thinks of the employee strictly as a worker and not a whole human being with a life outside of work, that will cause someone to quit. Showing lack of appreciation will cause someone to quit. A lack of acknowledgement for the work that they've done. When providing feedback, always just corrective in nature, never positive, never balanced feedback. You know, when they feel like they're not listened to, they're not empowered, they're not trusted, those are all the kinds of things that cause somebody to say, I just can't work with this person anymore. When they're treated disrespectfully, called out and, you know, in front of other people, publicly ridiculed, all those kinds of things are the things that sort of hit that top 10 list.
Wonderful. Well, Susan, it's been a pleasure to have you here with us today, and we had a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your lunchtime with us.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. And for those listeners that are interested in heart-centered leadership, you can certainly go to heartcenteredleadership.com or even steinbrecher.com. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. And we look forward to having you on the show again. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning into Drive Through HR. And we will talk to you all tomorrow.